I believe in our last lesson we considered, Rachel and Jacob. However, at the risk of being redundant, we're going to review a little of what has gone before so that you can follow today's lesson the better. Our lesson, of course, was found in the 29th chapter of the book of Genesis. You will recall that Jacob saw Rachel first as he approached the well with her father's sheep. I think, too, that the bride of Christ is found by the wells of water, gathered there, as it were, with her father's sheep. And we find, dear friends, that the minute Jacob saw Rachel, something happened to him. Can you guess? Sometimes it is called love at first sight. And while there is very little that can be said in favor of love at first sight, this is an exception to the general rule. He loved Rachel. He loved her more than anything else. And what love is, I doubt very much whether there is any human that could define it. We can tell how it acts and how it reacts. That's what Paul did. He didn't tell us what love is, but he tells us how it acts and how it reacts. There's nobody can tell you what electricity is, but they can tell you what it'll do and what it can't do. They may even be able to tell you as to how to generate it. But that's about all that they can tell you. What it is still the secret which remains with God. And I think that love itself is the greatest power for good in this earth. I don't think there is any power in all of the world that can compare with love. And my reason for saying this is that I believe you cannot find a physical basis for love. There are a great many loves in this world which are based on physical attraction. Sometimes convenience is involved. But that is not love. The love that we speak of is the love which was in God himself. And when he created man in his own image and after his likeness, he gave him the ability to love as God loved. Now we say that was lost, more or less, when the human race fell into sin. Love has suffered correspondingly, even as the image of God in man has suffered. But it has never been entirely effaced. You will still find evidences of the image and likeness of God in humankind. But we say, dear friends, that often it is so rare that when you do see a character that evidences it, it just stands out and the world stands aghast. Or shall I say, aghast? They don't recognize it. It is so superhuman, so supernatural, so divine. That's the reason that it is oftentimes said, to forgive is human, to forget is divine. It's much easier to forgive than it is to forget. And so we find, dear friend, that in the heart of Jacob, something took place. Undoubtedly, there was a physical attraction. But I believe it was beyond this. And he loved Rachel. He knew by this time that she was his own kin. And so when she got close enough, he stooped over and kissed her. I think then he also knew who would be his future bride. At least in his own heart, that had been determined. He had entered in upon this mission of going to Mesopotamia with the object of getting for himself a bride from the household of Abraham. And here let me remind you, dear friend, that the household of Abraham, which of course included Laban, corresponds to the great household of faith, out of which the bride of Christ called. But while Laban, like Terah, the father of Abraham, believed in Jehovah, he was still an idolater. He still had his idols. Laban still had his idols. And that becomes evident in a lesson which follows, maybe several weeks, the one that we ask you to do, Lord willing.
When Rachel
took some of these household gods with her when she left her father's house. So you see, dear friends, it is not at all surprising then if we find in the antitypical household those who believe in Jehovah, but who are nevertheless idolaters, who still have their own idols. By these idols, it may be one of human affection. It may be one of human ambition. It may be one of human pride. It may be one which involves what others think of me. All of these are idols, which to that extent displace God. For if God comes first, then all others must take a lower place. And in fact, none is to share the glory that belongs to God. And one of these idols that finds its way into the household of faith, of which we consider ourselves as mine, is the idol of self. You say you believe in God, but sometimes instead of heeding the word of God, instead of being obedient to his will, you follow the line of least resistance, whereas the line which God has set out for you might be one that is very difficult. And you fear, well, you don't trust. You don't have faith. Look at the faith of Abraham, who left the land where he was born, his father's house, and eventually his kin. And the bride which is selected by Jacob would likewise have to leave the land. She would have to leave her father's house. She would have to leave her kids. Thus you see, dear friends, how those to whom the promise is given, those who are to be the channel through which the messianic blessing is to flow, are likewise called out from among all people to be separated unto God and unto him alone. Now we would remind you then, dear friends, that after this, we find Jacob in the house of Laban. In Laban recognizes his son, but he remembers that when Eliezer came to the house to get the bride for Isaac, that he came with camels, he came with treasures, he came with gifts and with presents, but not so Jacob. He had no camels, he came afoot. He didn't have any gifts or presents. And he explained this matter to Laban. And you know Laban, well, he was a member of that household, that typical household of faith. Nevertheless, he was very shrewd in so far as this world's good was concerned. And while he had a half hope in the promise of God that a theocratic government would someday be established in the earth, and that the blessing would flow to all people by way of the Christ, the seed of Abraham. Yet, he saw that Jacob had nothing, and he knew what Jacob's mission was. He knew that Jacob was already head over heels in love with Rachel. And so he said to Jacob, well, you're a relative of mine. You're a brother of mine. I don't want you to work here for nothing. I want you to have some pay. Jacob said, all right. I don't want any pay. But I'd like Rachel for my wife. And an agreement was made that he would work 7 years. And it says they streamed like a seven. Well, now, dear friends, actually, he must have longed and yearned for the ending of those 7 years. But love has a way of smoothing out the difficulties of the heart. And so those 7 long years of toil for his father-in-law to be seemed as though they were nothing at all. I wonder, dear friends, how much you and I have as much of that principle of love in our hearts for God and his truth, that we will labor and we will toil 7 years, yes, until our consecration is completed and perfect. And to think at the same time, it is but a slight affliction, and not to be compared with that great, exceeding, eternal weight of glory that shall be ours. So we find something in Jacob there that is a lesson to us. What is it that made him see that those 7 hard years of toil and labor were of nothing? Just a little piece. It was love. I think of the old, I don't know whether they still do it, but they used to do it. In the swift Alps and the precipices and crevices of the mountains, there grows a little flower that is called the edelweiss, for the man who loves a girl. It isn't the diamond ring that he finds for her, but the rest of the life that he takes to procure for the one whom he loves an edelweiss was the treasure of her life. Dear friends, anything that is worthwhile must be paid for by a great price. Anything that you can get for nothing is worth holding. If you want the crown of life, you have to pay for it. You have to strive for it. You have to work for it. Not be able to gain that crown of life. Crown of life, the crown of righteousness. You will not be a part of that royal diadem of God unless you try. And that is law. So we say, dear friends, that that which moved Jacob was love. I'm not talking about a mere sentimental love. The love that I speak about, which was tight in the heart of Jacob, is the agape love. It's the love which the Father has, a disinterested love. Now you ask me, where was there anything of the semblance of a disinterestedness in the heart and mind of Jacob? Surely you will not find it there in the same standard that you find it during the gospel dispensation in the hearts and minds of those that have become identified with Christ Jesus. You can only find its counterpart, that which types it, and the shadow can never be as clear nor as sharp as the reality. Nevertheless, the picture forth the reality, even as the sacrifice of Isaac at Mount Moriah typified that same love. Yet it was only a type. It was a picture. It was a shadow. And could never fully portray, never fully picture what it meant for the heart of God to give his only begotten Son to die as a malefactor upon Calvary's tree. So, Jacob had offered to work 7 years, and he worked these 7 years. And they seemed as though they were but a short season. And Jacob loved Rachel and said, I will serve these 7 years for Rachel, thy younger daughter. I want you to note this, dear friends. Thy younger daughter. The reason I say this is, while there isn't a word said in all of Holy Writ in condemnation of the deception that Jacob and his mother practiced against Esau and Isaac, still there isn't a word of commendation either. But let me remind you, dear friends, there are sins for which we individually are not wholly accountable. Those sins trace to the fact that we were born in sin and chastened in iniquity. They have been covered by the death of Christ Jesus on Calvary's cross. But there are other sins, dear friends. Sins which we commit in our sin, so to speak. In the fact that we were born in sin, shapen in iniquity, we have imperfect human bodies. We couldn't do perfectly if we wanted to do it. But on the other hand, in this condition, we do commit iniquity and transgression, for which the atonement of Calvary does not compensate. For which it is needful that a retributive atonement be made. And God has a way of balancing these accounts. He may have pardoned the transgression, forgiven our debt as we have forgiven our debt. But, dear friends, God has ordained certain laws which are inexorable. And these he does not violate. And these in their own way will square off the account before you finish your course. Some men's sins go to judgment before. Yours must go before. But others are after. If you don't quite understand what we mean, you will see as we go along with this lesson. I want you to note particularly now that in the agreement made between Jacob and his father-in-law-to-be, he was to labor 7 years for the younger daughter. I put emphasis on the younger daughter. And Laban said, it is better that I give her to thee than that I should give her to another man. Abide with me. And Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed unto him but a few days for the love he had. Unto Laban, give me my wife, for my days are fulfilled, that I may go into her. Now, there you are, 7 years over. I could just hear that heart of Jacob pounding like everything, my years of servitude are over. The desire of my heart to be mine. Oh, how I love her. Now to have her for my very own. Let me remind you, dear friend, I want you to note some of these things that are not on the surface of the account. You will remember that Isaac knew that his was to be Jesus' promise, that the blessing was to come through Isaac. But you notice that he had a prejudice in favor of his neighbor. Do you remember? That can be, you see. It's contrary to the will of God. But God will right it. You'll find a similar lesson in connection with Jacob. The sins of the fathers are visited upon the children to the third and the fourth generation. We'll see how truly this works out. God had established that. You say the law of Sinai had not yet been given. Of course it hadn't been given. But the law of God was already in effect. At the very foundation of the world. Oh, you say no one was bound under it until maybe so. But the law of God still stood. It was there. The mere fact that you know that you can take a bath. If you want to, you can go outdoors in the winter time, half hour after your bath. You know it's not the best thing to do. You go out. Does your knowledge of the fact that you know it isn't the best thing help you any? Does the fact that you throw a bundle of clothes around you help you much? No, of course it doesn't. The law is inexorable. It makes no difference who you are. The law makes it. It goes that far. We can't change it. It's inexorable. So, he says here, Jacob said to Laban, give me my wife, for my days are fulfilled, that I may go in unto her. Laban gathered all the men of the place and made a great feast. Sounded good, didn't it? Jacob's going to have a wedding. Yes. 7 long years he's waited for this wedding. All the people in the neighborhood. Well, of course, the neighborhood in that was a bigger place than this. They came from miles and miles around. It wasn't a case of getting home that night. So the feast lasted 7 days. wedding celebration that was. One day is enough these days. They got their headaches the next morning from just the one day. But it was like that in those days. You see, the world has advanced some since then. It crowds into a few hours what it used to take years. And so, we pay the price because our heads can't keep up with our hearts. So he got the great big feast, and it came to pass in the evening, probably on the seventh day of the feast. Or it may have been before, it doesn't specifically tell us. And it came to pass in the evening that he took Leah, his daughter, and brought her to him, and he went in unto her. And Laban gave unto his daughter Leah, Zilpah, his maid, for an handmaid. And it came to pass that in the morning, behold, it was Leah. And he said to Laban, what is this that thou hast done unto me? Did not I serve with thee for Rachel? Wherefore then hast thou beguiled me? Do you see anything of the retributive atonement here? This time, the elder is placed for the younger. Before, it was the younger for the older. Now you see, dear friends, there's not a word of condemnation said, but it shows the retributive atonement that God exacts. You may violate his law, but you may come into harmony with God and have sweet peace in your mind and your heart. But you will pay for the transgression in one way or another. You don't know how, but to the extent that you are responsible. Of course he has a right to represent his daughter, because he so sold his birthright. But, dear friends, would it not have been better for Jacob and for Rebekah to have exercised the faith of Abraham and trusted in God, have known that what God said would be accomplished, would be accomplished? Since God had promised the blessing to come through Jacob, did they need to assist God? No, but you see, that's what Sarah caused Abraham to do before. God had promised to see, but he didn't come as quickly as the old flesh wanted it to come. You know, sometimes you and I expect miracles in this flesh of ours. We become discouraged because of the fact that we don't make the progress that we think we ought to. It isn't that we shouldn't strive to make that effort. But the point is this, that don't expect what is impossible. The Lord will see that all the trials that are necessary to develop you and to fashion you will come your way. There's nothing that you can do to avoid it. If you are to be a gem in the royal diadem, you'll see that you get the property, that you get the policy, that you get the rubbing and the scratching. You say it's too bad. I wonder what I've done now. It isn't always because you've done something either, dear friend. Else Jesus would never have been chased. But how else could he have become a faithful and merciful high priest? Faithful toward God and merciful toward the people. Only through the trials. Only through the chastening process of the land. And so insofar as Jacob was concerned, he was to be a channel, yes, through which the messianic line would of course come. But there's that goal. But there was a lot in Jacob which needed to be trimmed and polished, buffeted, chiseled, scratched, whatever. And so We're not justifying Laban. Don't say Laban was right in what he did. Two wrongs never do make a right. Two odd numbers will make an even number. But two even numbers will never make an odd one. Remember that. So in this case, the fact that Laban did what he did, he practiced deception. But was it any different than the deception that Jacob and Rebecca had practiced upon Isaac? It was deception. But dear friends, you see, here comes a part of the retributive law. If it's in the nature of a transgression, God may exact an additional 20%. That's what the Israelites of old had to say, according to what the priest himself might declare. The value should be the essential. And so God sometimes will ask you to pay a little more. When Jesus asked that his disciples have love in their hearts, he didn't say, I want you just to have the love that you love your neighbor as yourself, but I want you to go beyond that. I want you to love one another as I have loved you. That goes beyond that, doesn't it? And so you see, Laban, he probably had in his own mind the thought, well, I'm going to let him have Rachel anyway. And so when Jacob asked about the matter, he said, well, you know, it isn't done that way in this country. The older daughter has to go. Remember what the contract was? Do you remember what he said? Jacob said, I'll serve you 7 years for the younger daughter. And Laban says, it's better that I give her to you than to a stranger. But you see, there's a little loophole in there. Her, Rachel, is not mentioned. You see? And that's what we have lawyers for, isn't it? To find a hole someplace where you and I can fall through, but you want everybody else to stay on the other side. But just big enough to let you and me go through. The world is full of that sort of thing. That's what politics is. That's what why the world is in the state and condition it is in today. Because people are not conscious in their state. Goes on to say here, and Laban gave unto his daughter Zilpah his maid. It was his own maid that he gave to Leah. And it came to pass that in the morning, behold, it was Leah. Well, you say, how could a thing like that happen? What's the matter with Jacob's eyes? Were they just as tender as Leah? No, dear friend. The custom in those days was for a bride to be completely veiled as she fled to the bridal chamber. Not only so, but the bridal chamber was in practically absolute darkness. Leah herself must have loved Jacob because she entered into this with her father, even as Jacob had entered into the deception of Isaac and Esau with his mother. And the mother of Jacob was the sister to Laban. You follow? We're speaking slowly just so that you can follow it. Both members, so to speak, of the household of faith, and one of whom had left the house of her father and her skin and came into a land that she knew. Friends, I'm not going to speak about that. You can take that and, like the old cow, swallow it now. When you get by yourself under a nice tree, just chew it, bring it up again and see what you get out of it. You'd be surprised. pleasantly surprised at the lesson that God has been giving these old. There are some common pictures and types and shadows, but there are principles involved here too, which are lessons for you and for me. But when we measure ourselves by the divine standard, do we find something of Jacob in us? Do we find something of Laban in us? Do we find something of an Esau? I dare say, dear friends, that we do. And if we do, what do we do about it? So it came to pass in the morning that, behold, it was Leah. And he said to Laban, "What is this that thou hast done unto me? Did not I serve thee for Rachel? Wherefore then hast thou beguiled me?" And Laban said, "It must not be so done in our country to give the younger before the firstborn." Why didn't you say so, Laban, in the first place? You let me work 7 years in the hope, vain hope, didn't you see? And it just seems as though that hope was wrong. But it wasn't. It wasn't. God only added 7 years more. But before the 7 years were up, in fact, at the end of that very same week, he received Rachel also as his bride. But here you have polygamy coming into the picture. You say through no fault of Jacob. No. Sometimes it isn't your fault. Sometimes it isn't my fault. But whose fault is it? The overruling providence of the Lord, calling upon the unrighteousness of this world, which oftentimes still have a root in our hearts, to praise and glorify God. Remember in the passage that we read before the service today, neither one of his children had done anything. It was the election of God. And who art thou, O man, that would dare question God? He had an infinite mind, you could reason infinitely. But since he's got but a finite mind, things are not necessarily as they seem to you. When God could say of the Israelites of old, "I see no perversity in Jacob, I see nothing like that in him," you would have said, "Now that's a downright lie if Moses had said it." But since God said it, who is there to say that God was a liar? Didn't God say you tempted me these 10 times? Why, certainly God knew to the contrary too. That God could see beyond what you and I would see. And he would see mitigating circumstances. And that's the reason he can afford to be merciful to whom he will be merciful. And retain judgment for those for whom he would retain. You see? Laban said, "It must not be so done in our country to give the younger before the firstborn. Fulfill her week, and we will give thee this also for the service which thou shalt serve with me yet 7 other. Would you serve for me? Like an old fool. Well, I'll tell you. Again, Jacob wasn't an old man. He wasn't a young man either. He wasn't old in the sense that those patriarchs of old lived long lives. But he wasn't a young man in the sense that you and I would call one young today. He hadn't even reached 45. Some men are still young when they're 65. I say that's loud enough, 65. Come on, even old when they get to 70. You know, age is not a period of life for happiness. It's a state of mind. And so long as there's love, up in the heart. People don't grow old. That's the picture of love. I'd like to digress just a few moments. You know, the ancients practiced what they call alchemy. The alchemists were something like our chemists today, but like astrology and astronomy, while they're related together, nevertheless, while they have been more or less perverted, still there was much of truth in the ancient astronomy and also in the ancient alchemy. But what the ancient alchemists looked for was a universal solvent, an elixir of life. That's what he was looking for. He was looking for something, an alkahest, that would convert baser metals into gold. Now, dear friends, if you're looking for that philosopher's stone, if you're looking for that elixir of life, if you're looking for that alkahest, it's love. If you want to dissolve something that's hard and stony, you can do it with love. If you want to convert the basic characters into glorious characters, love will do it. It will amount to perception. Let me tell you something, dear friends. When the Spirit of God, which is love, was poured upon all the world of mankind, you know those hard and stony hearts that's going to become soft and flesh. Or shall I say flesh too? Maybe that would be better. Because the term fleshly has now a different connotation. But they'll become soft again. And the world of mankind will live longer. Because love is the elixir of life. And if you love, you live. But when you cease to love, the fact that you cease to love will begin to create poison in your system, to fatten, to worry, and with stress, with tiny souls. All of these things have a way of hardening the eyes, quickening the heart pulses. The first thing you know is that old matter is evil in your physical body, the result of a mental state of being. So you see, dear friends, what love will do. 7 more years! I can't see that Jacob to the gas to that. I can't see if he was staggered by that. All right, I love it. I'll work 7 years more. In other words, he's worked 7 already. Well, dear friends, did you ever come to the point where you had expected certain results? And then suddenly find that the waters of Mara were there. What did you do? Murmur or refine? If you did, then you deserve what you got. But if you remember God and His goodness in other days, you will find that He would lead you to the well of refreshing water. It wasn't long after Mara that he brought the children of Israel to Elam, to the oasis, where they could rest under the 70 palms and be refreshed from the 12 wells of water. So don't think for a moment when God lets you go to the very end of the line and then suddenly you meet disappointment that he's let you down. He hasn't. He hasn't let you down. He's just preparing you for something fine, something noble that he wants you to do. Something that you couldn't accomplish if it weren't for this little bit of doubt that is permitted to come your way. These are the ministries of Ezra. Before God, there is no such thing as God. I think it's in the 139th Psalm. It says the darkness and light are the same with God. To you and to me, it's darkness and light. But to God, even the darkness is light, because God intends by this darkness to purify us, to bring us to a realization of what He means to us. Like that little girl, remember, on the train there years ago when they didn't have the electric lights that they could turn on and off when they went through the tunnel. Had these little oil lamps, and you know, they wouldn't light those oil lamps during the day just to go 3 or 4 minutes through a dark tunnel. So when you went through a tunnel, you went through the darkness. And this little girl, you know, she walked up and down the aisle, and the mother said, "Sister darling, come here, still outside of me here, stay here." "No, mother, I don't want to. I just want to go around and see what's going on. I like to look out the windows and see these people. It's running up and down the aisle, you know." Mother had no influence over it. Finally, the darkness of the tunnel came. But you know, when they came out the other side of the tunnel, she was on her mother's lap with her arms around her mother's neck. "So, dear friends, that's just the way it is with God. He sends a little darkness with that little priest. What he is feeling. We don't appreciate the water till the well runs dry. We ne'er regret the bitter words passed beyond recall." And so it goes, dear friends, through God's mouth, a little darkness to come into the life of Jacob. And this darkness was not the darkness that, but for the pure heart that he would have upon him who was to be the channel for the Messianic land. We're just going to add a few words more. We want to get to a certain verse here. "Fulfill her weeks, and we will give thee this also, Rachel, for the service which thou shalt serve with me yet 7 other years. You know, Raven, he was no fool. He knew a good man when he had one. He knew that he could use his son-in-law. He was probably the best man he had on the whole ranch, plantation, or whatever you want to call it. I can bind him for 7 years more, I'll be in that much. And I'll have a few daughters with me too. See? Now, the children of this world are wiser than the children of life." And it says, "And Jacob did so, and fulfilled her wish, and he gave him Rachel, his daughter, the wife also. And Laban gave to Rachel, his daughter, Bilhah, his handmaid, to be her maid. And he went in also unto Rachel, and he loved also Rachel more than Leah, and served with him yet 7 others. Now, dear friends, Leah represents, in one sense of the word, the Jewish age. Leah brings forth, as it were, that which belongs to the old dispensation, which has to do with the earthly. Rachel brings forth that which represents